This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. You can follow me on Twitter at @1TimMurray. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Been loving the feedback, really have. I know I say it each and every week, but it continues to come in, and we really appreciate it. Keep hitting those reviews, those five-star ratings. It's very helpful to the podcast. Looking forward to chatting with Tyler Shoemaker. He'll be our guest today. The T-Shoe Index is updated for 2024. He's got his season preview out. You could slide into his DMs there at T-Shoe Index. We're going to go over some of his favorite season bets, season win total bets, game one bets as well. So looking forward to our conversation with Tyler Shoemaker, and I will be adding a season win total bet. We'll do that in the final segment after a chat with Tyler. I got the gears going. A couple other people were in agreement, so we will hit on that season win total and a couple other odds and ends to close things out. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Really love the content that has been coming from you guys, and we will continue to keep our word and be in your feed at least once a week. And then coming up in July, we do have some media days here in Las Vegas, so maybe some bonus coverage as well as we get ready for the 2024 season. Today, I wanted to do a little deep dive on the Heisman Trophy. Who wins the Heisman Trophy? When should we bet the Heisman Trophy? Do long shots ever win? So I wanted to dive into it a little bit. Last year, of course, Jaden Daniels winning the Heisman Trophy of LSU. I would say a little bit of an outlier in this regard, that LSU finished 13th in the final ranking. And the rankings I'm going to use, by the way, are the rankings of the team when the Heisman Trophy was awarded, not what they did ultimately after the Heisman Trophy was awarded, because obviously that does not matter. The Heisman Trophy is awarded before bowl games, playoffs, whatever it may be. So let's go back to 2000. Since 2000, which I think is a fair sample size and how things have changed from the Heisman Trophy, 18 quarterbacks have won it, 3 running backs, and 1 wide receiver. That, of course, Devontae Smith in 2020, much to the chagrin of Mac Jones, Heisman futures holders. Of the 4 non-quarterbacks to win the Heisman Trophy, Devontae Smith in 2020, Derrick Henry in 2015, Mark Ingram in 2019, and Reggie Bush in 2005, they were all either on the number one team in the country, Bush, Ingram, and Devontae Smith, or the number two team in the country, Derrick Henry. So to put it this way, if a non-quarterback's going to win the Heisman Trophy, he better be on the best team in the country, essentially how it boils down to. The Derrick Henry odds throughout the year are fascinating, and we'll get into that. And honestly, the majority of the non-quarterbacks are very interesting, and even some of the quarterbacks. But since 2000, 18 quarterbacks, 1 wide receiver, 3 running backs. I can't remember if I said Mark Ingram was 2019 or 2009. He was 2009, not 2019. That was Joe Burrow, maybe on the best team we've ever seen. In the playoff era, so the last 10 years, 7 of the 10 Heisman Trophy winners were on playoff teams. The only ones not on playoff teams, Lamar Jackson in 2016, and then the last two, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. Now, Caleb Williams is an interesting situation because C.J. Stroud was the favorite going into the Michigan game, right there with Caleb Williams, because Caleb Williams, in the second to last week of the regular season, had a monster performance against UCLA that made him and C.J. Stroud around co-favorites. Then C.J. Stroud went out and had a very poor performance and a loss to Michigan, and Caleb Williams became the runaway favorite, ultimately won the award despite losing to Utah in the Pac-12 championship. And then for Jaden Daniels, we'll never know, but Bo Nix was a significant favorite at most shops, odds on at most shops, I think as high as minus 185, heading into the Pac-12 championship game. Oregon, of course, lost that game, and Jaden Daniels' numbers were just outrageous at times. So three players have won the Heisman Trophy not being on a playoff team. Also interesting to note, Lamar and Jaden Daniels, if it were 2024, still wouldn't have been on a playoff team. But how much does that shift things, I think, is fascinating to think about heading into this year, 2024, with the expanded playoffs. So what do we need from our quarterback going back to 2000 final ranking? We mentioned Lamar Jackson not making the playoff. Lamar Jackson and Louisville finished 15th in 2016. But what is interesting to note about Lamar Jackson was that Louisville team fell off at the end of the year. They were 9-1 heading into a game on a Thursday night against Houston. They lost that game. They lost the season finale to Kentucky. But Lamar Jackson's numbers were just so outrageous at that point that it didn't matter. He was going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. But they were top five in the country when they lost on that Thursday night to Houston. Lamar Jackson, at one point entering the year, and shout out to Sports Odds History. They do a great job. SportsOddsHistory.com. So I have all of the odds for the Heisman Trophy dating back to 2009. That was the first year that they started keeping track of it. So a decent amount of data to help me out with this exercise. But Lamar Jackson, the outlier for a guy who ran for over 1,500 yards, 21 touchdowns, threw for over 3,500 yards and 30 touchdowns. If you remember back to a mid-September game when Louisville played Florida State, September 17th, Louisville beat number two Florida State 63-20. Lamar Jackson rushed for four touchdowns, threw a touchdown, and at that point, it was done. He went to minus 275 by week five of the college football season and remained the favorite the entire year. That's a bit of an outlier. But what I was going to get to is the worst ranking this century for a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback is 15th. Lamar Jackson in Louisville in 2016, RG3 and Baylor in 2011. RG3 and Baylor. How about this? Going back to 2011, RG3 and Baylor were 4-3. Robert Griffin III, who would ultimately win the Heisman Trophy, was 75-1 to win the Heisman Trophy week 10, ladies and gentlemen. That is just unheard of. Why did he ultimately win the Heisman Trophy in 2011? Well, he had a remarkable Heisman moment November 19th. They played number five Oklahoma. They won 45-38. Baylor had never beaten Oklahoma in their school's history. They were 0-20, excuse me, in 2011. 0-20, and RG3 threw for 479 yards, four touchdowns, no picks, and also led them on a five-play, 80-yard game-winning touchdown drive with 43 seconds, in 43 seconds, with 8 seconds to go. The favorite throughout the year was actually Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck was at one point a minus $5 favorite to win the Heisman Trophy in 2011, and then Stanford lost to Oregon, lost another game, and that opened the door for Robert Griffin III. So we're going to go through this exercise and look at some of the fun. To me, it's kind of fun just from the sense of historical looking at where these odds were, because I forgot where a handful of these odds were. I did remember in 2015, Leonard Fournette heading into LSU's game against Alabama was minus 250 in the middle of the season. But I think my overall point is going to be this. Is it worth betting a Heisman future right now? I don't think so. Maybe a long shot if you could get the Joe Burrow preseason at 200-1, which all of us wish we had in our pocket back in 2019. If you could get the Lamar Jackson 100-1, if you're looking for a long shot, I think that is a way to go. But do you need to play Carson Beck, Quinn Ewers, Dylan Gabriel, Jalen Milroe, Will Howard, Jackson Dart? Do you need to play them right now? Will there be a time in which you could grab them at either a comparable number or a better number in season. I'll give you two examples real quickly of my personal betting. 2021, CJ Stroud, I believe, missed a game early on in the year, wasn't thriving. He was 30-1. And I want to say late September or early October. I was able to grab that. He did not win the Heisman Trophy, but it set up a situation where I was able to get off of it when Bryce Young was plus money heading into the Auburn game in the final weekend of the season. Last year, Bo Nix, after Oregon lost to Washington, he was 30-1. We looked at the schedule we talked about on this podcast. Adam Burke and I both grabbed that 30-1 ticket. I think Femi Abebefe was on it as well. Did we get home? No. But we were odds on to win it, and you had an opportunity, if you wanted to get off with Jaden Daniels. So I would say when you're looking at some of the shorter shots, history's telling us that we're going to get a pretty good opportunity to get a better number. So let's run through it real quickly. Mark Ingram in 2009, very unique situation. He was 40-1 to win the Heisman entering week six. Entering the conference championship weekend, he was 10-1. Colt McCoy was minus 350. Texas would lose that game. Alabama beat Florida. Ingram went for three touchdowns. Bada bing, bada boom. He won the Heisman Trophy. Cam Newton, 2010. Had to be on this one early, but week three, he was 20-1. By week 10, he was minus 450 and never relented after that. 2011, we mentioned RG3, preseason 28-1. Got out to 75-1 in week 10. They were 4-3 with back-to-back 20-plus point losses. So let's be honest. It's easy to go back and look at odds and say, oh man, we should have grabbed it at 75-1. There's no way in hell I would have thought after Baylor got their ass kicked in back-to-back games, you know what? I'm going to look at that Baylor team and RG3 to be the Heisman Trophy winner. They didn't lose again. Andrew Luck, minus $5, as mentioned, against Oregon. That fell apart. How about Johnny Manziel in 2012? Johnny Manziel entering the Alabama game, the infamous Alabama game, was 20-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. They walked into Tuscaloosa on November 10th. They beat Alabama 29-24. He threw for 253, two touchdowns, rushed for 92 yards. The week prior against Mississippi State on the road, Johnny Football went 30 of 36, 311 through the air, 129 rushing yards, two touchdowns against a ranked Mississippi State team. All in all, Johnny Manziel accounted for 47 touchdowns in 2012. Colin Klein was a minus $3 favorite prior to week 12. And then Kansas State lost to Baylor, opened up the door for Johnny Manziel. He wins the Heisman Trophy. 2013, I actually was surprised that Jameis Winston's numbers or odds were as long as they were. Jameis Winston was 15-1. To win the Heisman Trophy in 2013, there it is. They played Clemson. Jameis Winston goes absolutely haywire against Clemson in that game. 51-14 win for Florida State. 444 yards. Now, once again, he was 15-1 in week six. He was 4-1 before the Clemson game. They win by a billion. Johnny Manziel was the favorite at that point. They lose in overtime to Auburn, and Jameis Winston is able to win the Heisman Trophy. 2014, Marcus Mariota wins the Heisman Trophy. Opened the season 5-1. Not a great time, not a ton of value throughout the season, but you actually could have got Marcus Mariota at 7-1 in late September when Oregon lost to Arizona. It went down to plus 250 the following week when Oregon beat UCLA. So there is opportunities if a team, as we talked about last year with Bo Nix, even though it didn't get there, when a team loses. All right, we'll keep running through it. I don't know if I'm boring anyone, but I think it's kind of interesting. 2015, Derrick Henry, 25-1 preseason. He was around, I think, 5-1 heading into, or he was 14-1, I beg your pardon, heading into the LSU game, week 10. Leonard Fournette was -250. Derrick Henry went for 210 yards. Leonard Fournette went for 31, I believe, on 19 carries. Leonard Fournette didn't even get invited to New York City. Derrick Henry wins the Heisman Trophy. You could have got him at 14-1 prior to the LSU game. Lamar Jackson alluded to this one, 100-1 preseason. He was 8-1 before the Florida State game in week 3, -275 after that, and it was a absolute runaway. 2017, this one surprised me. Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma started the season 7th in the country, and I thought I recalled that Baker Mayfield was kind of the runaway, always going to win the Heisman Trophy. He was 7-1 preseason, and then he was actually 10-1 week 9 to win the Heisman Trophy. Then he threw for 589 yards versus Oklahoma State in week 10. He was 8-1. The odds-on favorite in 2017 in the middle of the season, do you know who it was? Saquon Barkley of Penn State. He was -150. Penn State loses by 1 to Ohio State. Still was the favorite. Then they lost to Michigan State and he went out to 15-1. Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman Trophy. 2018, I think you guys might remember this one. 2018, Kyler Murray wins the Heisman Trophy. Do you know what his odds were prior to the Big 12 championship game? 7-1. Tua was -1,000 at the Westgate Superbook heading into conference championship weekend. What happened that weekend? Oklahoma won, and later that day, Alabama won. Well, why wouldn't Kyler Murray or why wouldn't Tua still be the favorite? Because Tua got benched for Jalen Hurts in that game. Tua was playing very poorly. He went 10 of 25 against Georgia, replaced by Jalen Hurts. They win the game. Kyler Murray wins the Heisman Trophy. So if you understand where I'm coming from, there always kind of seems to be a time to jump in and grab a better number. A couple more examples. More recently, 2020. Now, I was surprised to see this ultimately unfold. Mac Jones was -$2 entering the conference championship. Devontae Smith was +200. He was 22-1 the week before. Devontae Smith against Florida went for 15 catches, 184 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Mac Jones, by the way, threw for 418 yards and 5 touchdowns. I'm still surprised that Devontae Smith won it. However, when I think back to the LSU game on December 5th, Devontae Smith was 50-1. He went for 8 catches, 231 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Caleb Williams, 2022. Open the year 8-1. Okay, so there's someone that is 8-1 entering this year. Carson Beck's 8-1. Quinn Ewers is 9-1. Caleb Williams prior to week 10 was 14-1. Hendon Hooker was even money. CJ Stroud was +120. Caleb Williams is 11-1 entering the UCLA game. He threw for 470 yards in a 48-45 win, and then he and C.J. Stroud basically became toss-ups. Remember, Hendon Hooker in Tennessee lost to Georgia and then had the 63-point debacle in the loss to South Carolina, in which Hendon Hooker tore his ACL, so he was therefore eliminated. And then lastly, let's go to last year. Jaden Daniels, you could have got Jaden Daniels at 40-1 after week 1, LSU lost to Florida State in Orlando on that Sunday night. And you could have got Jaden Daniels at 40 to 1. He was 14 to 1 in week 11 and then went bonkers against Florida. 372 yards, 3 touchdowns, 234 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns. He went from 14 to 1 down to 4 to 1. And that's where the discussions really began. And I was trying to play the other side, like, no, Bo Nix should win the Heisman Trophy. And ultimately, Bo Nix, who was minus 185 entering conference championship weekend, does not win the Heisman Trophy, and Jaden Daniels wins it. So my point being, you can look around for some long shots. You can also be patient, because history is telling us that whether it be Carson Beck or Quinn Ewers or Jackson Dart, you're probably going to get a better number on one of your options out there. And then I look at what the history is telling us. The worst ranking for a Heisman Trophy winner is 15th. Since 2000, here are the final ranking of the Heisman Trophy winner. Chris Winkie, 3rd. Eric Crouch, 4th, but they were 2nd entering their final game against Colorado. Carson Palmer, 5th. Jason White, 3rd. However, number 1 entering the Big 12 title. Sometimes the Big 12, the championship games don't throw you off, but sometimes they will. Colt McCoy, Tua, Bo Nix, Matt Leinart, number 1. Reggie Bush, USC, number 1. Troy Smith, Ohio State, number 1. Tim Tebow, Florida, number 9. Tim Tebow in Florida, you got to remember, he accounted for 55 touchdowns in 2007, 895 rushing yards, 3,200 passing yards. The dude was insane that season. Sam Bradford, Oklahoma, number 2. Mark Ingram, Alabama, 1. Cam Newton, Auburn, number 1. By the way, Cam Newton, I didn't mention him. Could have got him 20 to 1 back in week 3. Yeah, he was minus 450 by week 10. RG3, mentioned him already. Number 15, Johnny Manziel and the A&M Aggies. Number 10, Jameis Winston, Florida State, number 1. Marcus Mariota, number 3. Derrick Henry, number 2. Lamar Jackson, number 15. Talked about him. Baker Mayfield, Oklahoma, number 2. Kyler Murray, Oklahoma, number 4. That was the unique circumstance of a Tua Tagovailoa. Joe Burrow, we didn't hit on him. Joe Burrow, 200 to 1, man, in February. Whoo! To have one of those tickets. I think his dad, didn't his dad apparently have that? 40 to 1 down in the preseason. Here was something that I found fascinating. And this is what I wanted to discuss too. And I was actually talking about this with Todd Furman, where it feels like the days of getting a top 10 team's quarterback at 40 or 50 to 1 are gone. Nico Imaleava, which I'm sure I'm butchering that last name, of Tennessee, 1 start under his belt. I might mention him later and be contradictory to myself. 18 to 1. You would have thought he'd be 40, 50 to 1. Avery Johnson of Kansas State, 25 to 1. Joe Burrow of LSU, preseason rank in 2019, number 6. You could have got him at one point at 200 to 1. Before the season started, he was down to 40 to 1. The last 4 Heisman Trophy winners, Devontae Smith was on the number 1 team, Bryce Young, number 1 team, Caleb Williams, we talked about that, number 8 team. However, they were number 4 entering the Pac-12 championship game, and then Jaden Daniels last year, number 13. So let's run through the top quarterbacks on the top teams. And if anything jumps out, Carson Beck, number 1 team, 8 to 1. Quinn Ewers, top 5 team, number 9. Dylan Gabriel, top 5 team, 10 to 1. Jalen Milroe, top 10 team, 14 to 1. Will Howard, top 2 team, 15 to 1. Jackson Dart, top 10 team, 15 to 1. Nico Imaleava, 18 to 1, top 15 team. Garrett Nussmeier, top 15. At LSU, 20 to 1. Cam Ward, Miami, top 20, 22 to 1. Riley Leonard, do we dare? 25 to 1, top 10. Avery Johnson, Kansas State, 25 to 1, top 20. Jackson Arnold, top 25 team, Oklahoma, 30 to 1. Connor Wegman, top 25, Texas A&M, 30-1. Shedeur Sanders, according to EA Sports, top 10, but according to the real world, not ranked, 35-1. Jalen Daniels of Kansas, 35-1, top 25. Brady Cook, top 15, Missouri, 35. Noah Fifita, Arizona, top 20, top 25, 40. Miller Moss, that's interesting. Lincoln Riley, not a top 25 team, probably to start the year. Brutal schedule, underdog week one. Could Miller Moss, I want a longer number, 40-1. DJ Uiagalelei, 40-1, top 15 team. And then this is the one that's very interesting. Drew Aller, 45-1 at DraftKings. Penn State quarterback. Penn State, and I understand, James Franklin, Penn State, they're going to want to run the ball. They have great running backs in Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton. They don't play Michigan. They play Ohio State at home. They don't play Oregon. Week one, they've got a prime time, or the big noon kickoff, I should say, against West Virginia. Andy Koltynicki is back. I don't love the wide receivers. But I just said maybe the days of having a top 10 quarterback, top 10 teams quarterback in that 45-50-1 range are gone. Drew Aller's right there, staring us in the face. And I remember all the hype, all the buzz. Oh, Sean Clifford's gone. We got our guy. And this is the one who's going to lead us to the promised thing. Things have changed here. Well, we didn't see it last year. Drew Aller, by the way, entering last year, 25-1. He's now 45-1 with a better offensive coordinator in Andy Koltynicki from Kansas. I'm just saying, 45-1 on Drew Aller. I keep staring that thing in the face, just looking at it and saying, oh boy, do I do it? Like I said, I don't love the wide receivers. I don't love Drew Aller, but at 45-1, maybe a top five team in Penn State. I mean, let's look through their schedule. And yes, big game James hasn't historically fared all that well in some big games. But West Virginia, Bowling Green, bye. Kent State, Illinois, UCLA. At USC, bye. At Wisconsin, home to Ohio State. Washington, at Purdue, at Minnesota, Maryland. This is a team that's an odds-on favorite to make the college football playoff. With that schedule, home game against Ohio State, I'm just pointing out, looking around. Now, you also could get creative. Do you look at a backup quarterback? Maybe there's an injury. Julian Sayin, Ohio State. Will Howard shouldn't be 15-1. But he's got awesome wide receivers. He's got Chip Kelly. Julian Sayin, five-star recruit. Just saying. What about someone a little bit further down the board like Arch Manning? What do Arch Manning's number, what happens, and I'm not hoping for this, just pointing it out, what happens if Quinn Ewers gets hurt in preseason camp? What happens to Arch Manning's numbers? It's 100-1 right now. I know a buddy of mine and JVT actually mentioned this on VSiN Primetime, Dylan Raiola of Nebraska, 120-1. Schedule starts this way for the Corn. UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa, Illinois, all at home. At Purdue, Purdue stinks. Home to Rutgers, bye week at Indiana. He's a freshman, a true freshman. But what could Dylan Raiola's number look like if they're 7-0 heading into October 26 showdown at the Shoe? This is the time to kind of look around and take those flyers of a team that, you know, maybe you see the path. I'm not saying I'm betting any of these. I was texting with Ty Hildenbrand of the Solid Verbal, who is all in on Dylan Raiola at 120-1. Not saying he's all in, just intrigued by him. So like I said, I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth because I did this whole exercise. Don't bet him now. There's better opportunities during the season. I placed a bet. I'm going in with Nico. Nico, we're going to be a Nico podcast this year. Number two overall recruit per 247 Sports 2 years ago. He's 18-1 at DraftKings, 15-1 at Circa. Tennessee in the portal went out and added a left tackle in Lance Hurd, added Holden Stades, a tight end at a Notre Dame, added a wide receiver from Tulane in Chris Brazel, 44 catches, 711 yards, 5 touchdowns, added another tight end from Alabama. Squirrel White, their top wide receiver, he is coming back, 67 catches a year ago, 803 yards, 2 touchdowns. Brew McCoy and Dante Thornton both dealt with injuries. Brew McCoy, when Hendon Hooker was there, had 667 receiving yards. They added two top 100 wide receiver recruits in Mike Matthews and Braylon Staley. Yes, there doesn't seem like there is a Jalen Hyatt on this roster. But all I could keep thinking back is to what Hendon Hooker looked like in this Josh Heupel offense just 2 years ago. Joe Milton did not make sense in this offense. Nico, with his athleticism, it's a small glimpse, but what we saw him do against Iowa, I thought was impressive. The schedule, how about a week two primetime game on ABC against NC State? If Nico balls out in that game, what are we looking like for this number? And right now, Tennessee, not a massive favorite. I actually like NC State. 4.5-point neutral site favorite. They have a week four visit to Norman, against Oklahoma. Get Alabama at home, as they always play them the third week of October. And then the big one's Georgia. But hey, we talked about a Lamar Jackson. We've talked about others who may have kind of locked things up by the time mid to late November rolls around. However, to point out also facts, C.J. Stroud lost the Heisman Trophy, losing in ugly fashion to Michigan. Bo Nix last year in the conference championship. We talked about Colt McCoy. So it's happened. So I just like Nico. And I thought we'd get a better number. But I couldn't help myself. So I did this whole exercise. We talked for 30 minutes. And at the end of the day, what we should be doing is waiting. Is waiting for the time to strike in season. Because history has told us you're probably going to get a better number during the season. Unless it's a super long shot. Joe Burrow, RG3, even though RG3 was 75-1 middle of the season. However, none of us would have bet that when they lost back-to-back games by 20 points. Lamar Jackson was 100-1. But more often than not, we're probably going to get a pretty good number in season. Could have got a better number on Jaden Daniels. Better number on Caleb Williams. Bryce Young, yeah, you really never got a better number because they smashed Miami week one and he pretty much ran away with it. Devontae Smith could have got great numbers all year long. Kyler Murray, hell, he was 10-1 middle of the season. Wasn't 20-1, but 10-1 middle of the season. So there are opportunities throughout the year, more often than not, to bet the eventual Heisman winner during the season. So as a college football betting podcast, I spend a lot of times, especially in the preseason, preparing us. Should be our best bets? I just bet Nico to win the Heisman Trophy at 18-1. However, we probably shouldn't bet the Heisman market unless you're shooting for those long shots. Unless you think Dylan Raiola in Nebraska at 120-1 or Drew Aller, top five team potentially, 45-1. All right. Hopefully that helped you. Hopefully you learned a little bit of something. I had a lot of fun going through all of that. Tyler Shoemaker, he's going to break down the T-Shoe Index. He's got win total bets he likes, game one bets that he has in pocket. We're going to break that all down for you next on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. As promised, Tyler Shoemaker joins us right now on the podcast. Follow him on social media at TShoeIndex. His college football guide is out, available now. Slide into his DMs, and he will let you know how you can grab the college football guide heading into 2024. And he has been a contributor to VSiN and hopefully coming back this fall as well. So Tyler, looking forward to this man. I've been reading through all of your work and your breakdown. And I think, you know, we had Kelly Ford on last week, who it was an interesting conversation. Hopefully folks liked it because he's not a better. He's out there to make power ratings. He's fascinated by it, comparing it to the market. You, on the other hand, are a better. So you're looking for those edges out there. So before we dive into the edges that you have in both win totals and week one lines, the method to your madness, how did this all start? How have you gotten into the power rating business over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I love Kelly Ford as well. He and I actually did a show all season last season together. So definitely familiar with his work, but no, kind of a similar story to him. Just, you know, being a college football fan, I went to Ohio State. So obviously college football is in my blood. So I just decided one day, like I want to get into sports betting because that was, you know, starting to become popular in Ohio. And now I'm in South Carolina now. Like, so I was like, I've got to come up with a way that I can get an edge and really be competitive. I'm a competitive guy by nature, obviously as a former athlete. So I literally started like handwriting just basic formulas on paper with a pen. Then that evolved to a spreadsheet. And now my spreadsheet evolves into the guide that you see today. That's much more complex, obviously.
So when you look at Tyler's guide, it has every FBS and FCS team. And then there's, you know, different ways you could look at it. Best bets, breaking down the conferences and all of that. So when you put in these numbers initially, how often will you go back and just double check? Hey, yeah, this seems a little bit off. Like, for example, if you were two games off from the Vegas market, that's a pretty big discrepancy. And do you immediately fire or do you say, all right, let me just double check something, see if there was a tweak that I missed? How do you go about that if you ultimately find yourself way off market for a particular team?
Yeah, 100%. That's a great question. So kind of my process in the preseason, I'm looking at your last 2 or 3 years worth of TSI ratings because I have, you know, historic ratings. So I'm looking at not only your power rating over the last couple of years, but also how that correlated to your recruiting rankings, your 4-year weighted recruiting rankings. And because I want to be able to reward teams like in Iowa that develop well, but don't necessarily recruit at an elite level. So to answer your question, Tim, when I go through and do my initial run through and kind of put out my rough draft of the preseason ratings, I then will look at the market. I don't look at the market ahead of time because I don't want to have any preconceived notions about teams other than my ratings. So once I come up with that rough draft, I look at the market and then say, okay, like Clemson, for instance, I know we're going to get into them. Clemson was a team that I initially was at like 7.8 wins on. So I was like, okay, I know I'm always lower on my numbers, just have historically been lower on Clemson than the market. I was able to come up a little bit, but I absolutely, you know, in a situation like that, I'm like, okay, can I give them some benefit of the doubt with the data that I have in front of me? I'm not gonna, you know, just make stuff out of thin air, but if the data can support it in some way or another, I will try to move closer to market. But you know, there are some cases where I just can't based on the data. So I don't make stuff up. So if the data says it is what it is, then it is what it is.
You know, for me, and I mention this all the time, and this is more of a week to week mindset for me. And some of it, you know, will correlate with your numbers, kind of a buy low, sell high type of mindset. You know, the example I used with Kelly last week was the NBA Finals, where you looked at the Dallas Mavericks, and because they just beat the Minnesota Timberwolves, who beat the Denver Nuggets, everybody was high on the Dallas Mavericks, and the market respected that and still spit out around minus 220 for the Boston Celtics, and people thought that was wrong and disrespectful. Obviously, the market was accurate, and it should have been much higher. So there's that portion. But then for me, I like to play a lot of situations. So when you get into the minutiae of the season, how do you, with you know, someone like yourself who's so numerical and analytically driven, how do you quantify some of the potential you know, spots that might be tricky from a from a situational standpoint?
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's that's the beautiful part of handicapping, particularly I think in college football, I think is more so than other sports. But so my number, you know, my TSI rating, I try to really separate TSI from Tyler Shoemaker, the person, the better. So, you know, I have my number, but then also, you know, to your point, I'm looking at the situational spots. Now, the auto bet, as you said earlier, that's when I have a nice discrepancy from the market and I like the spot. That's like, okay, boom, this is a best bet. But there are times where my number says one thing and I'm like, man, I can't get there based on the situation or maybe based on how a team has played the last couple of games, and maybe my numbers haven't quite caught up to that. So I certainly take that sort of analysis into account when betting. I mean, I by no means, like Kelly said last week, my number is not the end all be all. There are flaws to every model, shortcomings. So it is my starting point, and I won't bet against my number. But if my number says one thing and my head says another, it's generally just a stay away for me.
All right, let's get into it. We're going to go through 12 different teams here, and then we're going to do some game of the year, week one, I should say, bets that intrigue you. We'll start with Missouri. Talked about them with Cole Kubelik last week. This is a team that's coming off of a monster season just a year prior, going to the Cotton Bowl, unfortunately dismantling your Ohio State Buckeyes. They're in that spot, even though it was obviously an Ohio State team that wasn't at full strength. And you look at this schedule, and that's what's so interesting about Missouri this year is, depending on whose model you go by, they are probably the easiest schedule in the SEC, just the way it plays out for them. They do not have to play Georgia this year. They do not have to play Ole Miss this year. They do not have to play Texas. Very, very manageable through the first 4 weeks before they go on the road to take on Texas A&M. So the market right now at Circa is sitting at 9, minus 105 to the over, minus 115 to the under. What did your numbers spit out for Missouri, and what is your expectation of the Tigers this season?
Yeah, so I really high on Missouri. I project them at 10.6 wins. To your point, I've got their strength of schedule. And just to clarify, when I say strength of schedule, by my numbers, that's just your average opponent power rating, taking into account where the game's played, home or away. And their average opponent power rating is minus 0.3, which is like unheard of for an SEC team. By contrast, I've got Florida at like 14.5 as their average opponent power rating. So, I mean, obviously Florida's schedule is like otherworldly, but Missouri's playing a team on average two touchdowns worse than what Florida's playing on a week-to-week basis. I mean, I think that's huge, and that can't be understated. So I do like them. I mean, from a power rating standpoint, they're number 5 in my preseason rankings. They are extremely high. And then you couple that with the relatively weak schedule, and I mean, that's a recipe for an over. At one of the prominent books, you can get over 9.5 at plus 146, mm-hmm. which, based on my numbers, is about a 45% edge. So that's a huge, huge edge, obviously. So that's definitely an over bet for me.
All right. I didn't just have Tyler on because his numbers are out of this world on Notre Dame. And I know people are getting tired of me talking about the Irish, but it's not me. It's Tyler. It's his numbers. Okay. So don't get mad at me, but you love Notre Dame. So let's dive into the Irish schedule. Pretty manageable. I talked about it a couple weeks ago, how I looked at the schedule, how it played out. You have Notre Dame a favorite in every game, and some of your projected spreads, almost two touchdowns against Florida State, is pretty wild. When you look at the schedule for Notre Dame and how this all played out, Circa right now, you can get it, or DraftKings actually is the best number, 10 minus 110 both ways for a win total. There are some markets out there around plus 450 for them to go undefeated. How do you look at the Irish this year?
Yeah, I do love Notre Dame. I tweeted that to you when I first got the numbers done. I knew you were going to love it. I knew it was just my way of getting on the show. I knew I'd get an invite if I boosted Notre Dame a little bit. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do project them at 10.8 wins on the season. Again, very similar to Missouri from the perspective that their average opponent power rating is minus 0.3. So they're playing a below average FBS team on average. Their average projected spread by my numbers on the season is 26.0. So I've got them as almost four touchdown favorites on average this season. You know, usually Notre Dame has a pretty decent schedule. You know, obviously being independent, they can schedule, you know, they've had Clemson the last couple of years, and they schedule those type of teams. But this year, it just kind of works out in their favor. And I like them from a team strength perspective, from a power rating perspective. So, I mean, I've got them six overall right behind Missouri. So, I mean, I think they're going to be in the playoff, no doubt. You know, we talk about week one at A&M as, you know, kind of a pivotal game in terms of that win total. I think the market's low on Notre Dame, and I think the market's high on Texas A&M. So I've got Notre Dame favored by 6.5 in that game at Kyle Field, which EA Sports says is the toughest place to play. So I guess we'll see. But that's almost a 71% win probability for me for them at Texas A&M in week one. And if they get that one in the bag, they can pretty much coast until Florida State, which, like you said, I've got them as about a 13.5-point favorite projected right now.
At DraftKings, if you're wondering, Notre Dame to go undefeated in the regular season is plus 425, which would be an implied probability of about 19%. What are your numbers spit out for them to go 12-0?
To go 12-0, I've got them at about just under 27%, so a nice edge there. So, I mean, especially at you said plus 450, that might be worth a little nibble, I think.
All right, let's jump into the Big 12. I'm so intrigued by this conference this year because I think it can go so many which ways, and I was looking through your numbers, and I'm glad to talk about one particular team to finally hear a little resistance on the other side. But we'll start positively with Kansas, and you know, to be honest, my worry about Kansas this year is the quarterback. It's not that I don't like Jalen Daniels; I really do like him, but he always gets hurt, and Jason Bean is no longer with them. But Devin Neal is back. They bring back a ton of production from a 9-win team, 8 in the regular season just a year ago. How can you not be a big fan of Lance Leipold? They did lose Andy Koltunicki to Penn State, which is an issue and I think a concern, certainly when it comes to calling the offense here. But what are your numbers spit out for Kansas right now? Looks like the market is sitting 8 minus 20 to the over on Circa for on Kansas for their win total.
Yeah, I've got them at 9.5 wins. Their average opponent power rating is just 0.4, so they've got a very manageable schedule. I'm with you though, Tim. I mean, the only concern I have with Kansas, I mean, their trajectory from a data standpoint year over year since Lance Leipold's been at the helm is just insane. I mean, I honestly had to kind of pull the reins back on what my actual projection would have been. In kind of my rough draft, I had them atop the Big 12, and I kind of pulled that back just a little bit to be a little bit more conservative and more wait and see, because they haven't quite earned the benefit of the doubt yet on that, which I'm big on. But the quarterback health is definitely the biggest question mark. I mean, Jalen Daniels could very easily be the Big 12 player of the year, lead them to a Big 12 title. I wouldn't be surprised by that. But also, we've seen an injury history there. And like you said, with Jason Bean this year to back him up as kind of your safety net, this is kind of, to a lesser degree, this quarterback room kind of reminds me of Ohio State 2019 with Justin Fields, where it's like, all right, they can be awesome if Justin Fields stays healthy, which they were. But if he would have gotten hurt that year, I mean, it was traffic cones behind him in the quarterback room. And I think Kansas is in a similar spot here this year. So the caveat to my projected win total of 9.5 on them is Jalen Daniels has to be healthy for that.
So let's get to Oklahoma State. Excuse me, getting choked up thinking about the Pokes and how someone is actually anti-Pokes. We've had plenty of people come on here. I've even talked about them. We've seen the market, especially in the Big 12 futures market, come down as they were as high as 12-1. Now some shops down around plus 750 for them to win the Big 12. Last year, they win 10 games. That includes the bowl, so 9 in the regular season. They bring back a ton of production, but here we have resistance. Your projected win total is pretty significantly lower than the market, which sits at around 8 wins across the board. Right now, even money to the under. So ultimately, when you looked at Oklahoma State, why did your numbers come out lesser than what the market is sitting at right now?
Yeah, so I'm at about 6.7 wins for them, which, again, like I told you before we recorded here, your interview with Paul Stone kind of made me take a second look at them because he was so high on them. But I do reference the market, but I'm only going to go off of what the data that I have allows me to do. And on Oklahoma State, even upon a second look, since Jim Knowles left, so Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator, his last year at Oklahoma State, their power rating was 19.4. But then each of the last 2 years, it's only been 2.2 and 4.4. And in those last 2 years, their development rating, which is my proprietary number of how your power rating correlates to how you've recruited, also took a huge hit each of the last 2 years. So I just could not come up any higher on Oklahoma State this year. Strength of schedule, 4.3. So, I mean, decent strength of schedule here. They open with South Dakota State, which could be tricky. You know, I expect South Dakota State to take a bit of a step back from where they've been. But still, I mean, certainly a capable FCS program. Play at Kansas State, West Virginia at home, which West Virginia should might be a sneaky good team this year. I don't love it. I'm prepared to be wrong based on, again, like you said, there's a lot of positivity around them this year. So I'm nervous about it. But again, I'm a data-driven guy, and the data just was not there for me to project any more forward of a leap for Oklahoma State this year than I did.
I'm going to read you a text, and Brett McMurphy, don't get mad. I don't think this was a text that was not allowed to be shared. I asked him on June 4th, why should I not bet his Pokes to win the Big 12? And he goes, too obvious, league too balanced. So Brett McMurphy, I don't know if that's the fan in him being pessimistic about his Pokes, but it does feel like the overwhelming positivity out there for Coach Gundy's squad is pretty high. And they'll be coming to town in a couple weeks for Big 12 Media Days. Sticking in this conference, once again, I am fascinated by the Big 12. You know, I love the SEC, the Big 10, how good it's going to be. But to me, Tyler, this conference is so intriguing because of the ramifications of the college football playoff this year. The fact that one of these teams is going to get a bye, barring, you know, a 6-6 team winning the conference and the G5 team being ranked higher. So let's get to Utah, who is one of the favorites to win this conference. And Cameron Rising, after missing all of last year with his injury, he is expected to be a full go. They bring back Brant Keithy. The win total in the market right now for the Utes is 9.5, -130 at Circa to the over. So let's run through Utah and what you see from the Utes.
Yeah, I've got them projected at about 10.5 wins this year. Again, I like them from a power rating standpoint, but also, you know, when you're talking about a win total, it's a combination of your power rating and your strength of schedule. And their strength of schedule, they're literally playing a 0.0 average opponent power rating. So they are playing the average team week to week this year. I mean, just looking through the schedule, I mean, they're at Oklahoma State. So that's, you know, that game is, okay, is Oklahoma State what everybody else says they are, or is Oklahoma State what my numbers are telling me they are? That could be tricky if it's the former. Arizona at home, I think Arizona takes a step back this year with Jed Fish gone. I mean, at Houston, at Colorado, like those games don't scare me. I've got them favored on average by about 20 points per game. So, I mean, I think it would take, knock on wood, you know, a major injury to them, you know, with Cam Rising's injury history. I think it would take something like that to derail them this year. I think they're absolutely the favorite to win the Big 12.
So it can't all be positive, right? We talked a little bit about Oklahoma State. So sticking in the Big 12 final team that, based off of your numbers, jumped out to me. And this is a team that I have been contemplating getting to the window on, and that's Arizona State. You look at their schedule, open against Wyoming, home to Mississippi State. Then you go on the road to Texas State, which, by the way, that could be a tricky spot against Texas State. A lot of pieces coming in there for Texas State. That's a short week too to go to Texas State. So Arizona State, pretty challenging to an extent, non-con, playing, you know, SEC team in Mississippi State, even though Jeff Lebby's squad is, you know, probably, based off of most people's power ratings, the second worst team in the SEC, but we'll see how it all plays out there. When you look at this for Arizona State, and one thing too that I note, getting Kansas and Utah at home, I actually think is a bad thing for Arizona State when you're a bad team. I'd rather play the better teams on the road and maybe get those toss-up games at home, like a Cincinnati. Instead, they have to travel to Cincinnati. So when you look at Arizona State, market's at 4.5. What did your projection spit out?
Yeah, I've got them at about 3.2 projected wins. I've only got them favored in their season opener against Wyoming at home. Got them favored by 4 points, and I've got them as underdogs in every other game this year. So strength of schedule, about 6.5. So pretty difficult strength of schedule here for them. This is just a program that has just taken a step back. Obviously, they've been trending down the last couple of years. I mean, their last two years' final power ratings were minus 8.9 and minus 8.3. So, I mean, they've been bad. I expect them to be bad again this year. And when you couple that with the fact their schedule is pretty difficult in a pretty good Big 12, it's just not going to be a good season for Arizona State.
Yeah, by the way, I mentioned Texas State. G.J. Kinney entering year two there, and they brought in Jordan McLeod, the transfer from James Madison. Should be a fun year. Texas State certainly could be a team that could win the Sun Belt this year. We're going to get weird later on here with a Sun Belt projection, but let's get to the ACC. Another team that people are pretty high on and bullish in the market is Virginia Tech. A lot of schedule related, you know, things there. Kyren Drones coming back for another year there. So Virginia Tech seems to be a team a little bit on the rise in the ACC. When you look at their projection, where do you have them versus the market? The market right now for Virginia Tech is a flat 8 minus 110 both ways.
Yeah, I've got them about 8.9 projected wins. So 9 being their most likely win total this year by my numbers. I think this was a team last year that I actually bet their season win total under 4.5 or 5 last year. But honestly, once they made the switch from Grant Wells to Drones, I thought they really took a step forward. And carrying that into this year, I mean, they project forward very well. Strength of schedule, very manageable. Only minus 0.5 average opponent power rating. So they're playing a below average team weekly this year on average. I mean, I've only got them as underdogs in 2 games, and that's at Miami and versus Clemson at home. So, I mean, the rest of their schedule, very, very manageable. So even if they would drop those 2 games as I project, they're still easily going over this win total. So I think this is definitely a team on the rise. There is a lot of buzz about them, but I think rightfully so.
Yeah, you look at the start of their season at Vandy, Marshall, at Old Dominion, and then Rutgers. This team will be favored in all of those games heading into that Friday night showdown, that old school Big East game. I kind of like that it's a Friday night down in Miami for Virginia Tech at Miami. And you alluded to it, Clemson, they get them at home, which is, you know, like I mentioned, the opposite of Arizona State. You want to, in my opinion, hey, you got a chance. Let's bring the big boy to us. So let's get to Clemson, a team that was very disappointing just a year ago, lost 4 games in conference play, which under Dabo is completely unheard of. 9.5 is where we sit right now in the market. DraftKings plus 135 to the over, minus 160 to the under. They open up the season with a neutral against Georgia, where they're almost a 2-touchdown underdog. They play Florida State on the road this year. They do not play Miami, but they get NC State, who's a tricky one. We talked about Virginia Tech as well on the road. Cade Klubnik, you know, it's hasn't been impressive. I was expecting some big things. I may or may not have put a bet in on him to win the Heisman last year. That obviously did not come home. So what is your projection on Clemson this year?
Yeah, like I mentioned, this was a team that even initially I was even lower on. I did kind of give them every possible benefit of the doubt to get their rating up to closer to market, but I still cannot get to where the market's at on them, both from a win total perspective. And then you look at just kind of their game of the year lines, like week one against Georgia. I've got them. I've got Georgia projected as a 17-point favorite in that game. So I've already bet the dogs in that game. I don't see it. You mentioned it. Cade Klubnik just has not been what we thought he might be, and that's starting to be a trend since Trevor Lawrence left town. That's been the trend. It was DJ's fault. You know, he's not good enough. So then they go to Cade Klubnik, and he's not really been any better than DJ was. So I'm seeing a trend here. You know, obviously the transfer portal stuff with them, like I don't love the vibe and the trajectory of Clemson. And, you know, I live in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm 40 minutes from from Death Valley. So, you know, I gotta be careful what I say here. I don't want my angry neighbors showing up at my house, but I mean, that's just how I see it with them. Like I said, I'm at 9.2 wins on them. Strength of schedule, just under 2. So manageable schedule, you know, on the surface, I just don't think they're as great a team as the market seems to think.
All right. I need you to clarify something. Are you Tyler from Spartanburg?
I did jokingly tweet that when that happened last year. I was like, it's me, Tyler from Spartanburg. Yeah. No, but I did.
Tyler.
Real quick, I don't know if you've heard this story or have seen me talk about it on Twitter, but I actually played in the spring of 2021. My rec league team, Dunk Dynasty, played against Dabo Sweeney, his sons, and some former some football players in our league championship. I highlight of the game was I got to cross over Dabo, get a bucket, and we ended up beating them by 40. And honestly, their program hasn't been the same since. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm just mad at Tyler from Spartanburg because that was the week leading into Notre Dame, and they came out and curb stomped the Irish there in Death Valley. But not everything has to be related to Notre Dame. I promise. We'll move on quickly. The Ponies of SMU, yes, they're now in the ACC. And mentioned last week, Kelly Ford was on, and I was looking through Kelly's numbers. And as Kelly alluded to, he is not a bettor. He's actually not allowed to bet based off of his occupation. But his numbers spit out a 9.1 on SMU. You look at their schedule, they open up week 0 on the road against Nevada, where they're around a 3-touchdown favorite. FCS Houston Christian, you get BYU on a Friday night, bye week before taking on your in-state rival TCU. You get Florida State to come to Dallas on September 28th. You get both of the California teams in the ACC, which I think is a benefit to them. There's no Virginia Tech. There's no Miami. There's no Clemson. The schedule in year one for Rhett Lashley from a conference standpoint is as nice as you could ask. This was a team that should have, in my opinion, gotten the G5 berth to the New Year's Six a year ago over Liberty. Win totals 8, juiced minus 125 to the over on SMU. What are your numbers on the Ponies?
Yeah, this was I pounded the drum for SMU all year last year. I took so much heat for where I had them rated all year last year. Even after they lost the Oklahoma game last year, because of their performance in that game, they actually went up in my power ratings, and I took a lot of heat for that. I'm on the over again this year. I've got them about 8.7 wins. To your point, strength of schedule, minus 4.5. For a Power 4 team, that is absurdly low. that's as low as it gets for a Power Conference team. But you mentioned Nevada, Houston Christian. I mean, I've got them as 50-point favorites in that Houston Christian game. I mean, it's a very, very manageable schedule for a good team and a team that's on the rise. I mean, you look at their last 3 TSI ratings. So in 2021, they were just a 0.4, and then they went up to 1.6, and then last year they jumped to 7.4. So it's been an upward trajectory, moving really fast. I project that forward again this year. I think SMU is going to have a really good year.
Last one in the ACC, Manny Diaz back as a head coach after a couple of years being the defensive coordinator at Penn State. And for Duke, it seems like it's going to be a bit of a rebuild there with Mike Elko leaving. A lot of pieces obviously go out the door. Riley Leonard now with Notre Dame. RJ Oben goes to Notre Dame. All these other pieces head out. Jordan Waters, I believe he's at NC State, if my memory serves me correct there. So this is a team that has to bring in a lot of new pieces. They did go out and get Malik Murphy from Texas to play quarterback for them, but this has been a win total, and we were talking about this off air, where it's been pounded by respective bettors, at least from what I understand, and it's now sitting at 5.5 at DraftKings, juiced under at minus 125. Circa, I think, has gone to a flat 5, Tyler. So is this a win total that maybe has gone too far now in the market based off of your numbers?
It's almost just right as far as my numbers are concerned. I would only give them about a 43% chance to go over that. So still some value on the under. I'm at about 5.3 projected wins for them. Strength of schedule, minus 0.3. So again, you know, betting an under, you would like to see a little more difficult strength of schedule. But I mean, the ACC is what it is. So can't fault them too much there. I mean, they've got Elon, Northwestern, and UConn. in the non-conference. I only have them favored in 4 games. And one of those is Wake Forest by just 4 points. So, I mean, you know, that's essentially a toss up. So I think this is a complete rebuild. You know, I think Manny Diaz might do a good job there long-term, but it's not going to be this year.
All right, let's get one Big Ten team in. And yes, Big Ten, when I reference UCLA, unusual situation from a coaching standpoint where Chip Kelly was rumored to be up for a bunch of offensive coordinator jobs in the NFL. Those don't come through. And then Ohio State's offensive coordinator position opens up and he lands there. And now you're looking at UCLA going to Deshaun Foster with no head coaching experience. He is a UCLA guy, which I think is important for the stability of that program. You know, week one, we talked about on the podcast, Hawaii was catching 17. I'm looking at the DraftKings line right now. It's down to 14. So money has been coming in heavy on the Bows in week one there against UCLA. They have to go to LSU September 21st, the UCLA Bruins do. The stretch from September 21st to October 5th is about as challenging as it comes. At LSU, home to Oregon. Oregon's off a bye at Penn State. And then you play Minnesota at Rutgers. You have a trip to Nebraska, which I think will be very challenging. So it's not going to be an easy year. They also host Iowa. Win total right now at DraftKings is 5.5 for the Bruins, minus 140 to the under. What do you see for UCLA in year one of the Deshaun Foster era?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a rough one. You know, again, both in terms of their power rating is not great. It's only a 3.5, so they're just barely above, you know, an average FBS team. Their schedule is brutal. I've got them with the 4th most difficult schedule in the country. Average opponent power rating of 9.7. You know, you mentioned that stretch from September 21st to October 5th. I've got them projected by a total of 71 points as an underdog combined in those 3 games. Combined win total of about 20% total in those 3 games. So it's going to be a rough season for them, no doubt. I've got them at 4.5 wins, if I didn't mention that. So I they're going to go under this win total. It's going to be a really rocky start to the Foster era.
All right, let's get a little weird. We mentioned a Sun Belt team in Texas State that I think will be a lot of fun with G.J. Kinney down there in San Marcos. Staying in the Sun Belt, Georgia State, you have a pretty significant edge on the Panthers. So what is your number? Market for Georgia State is 4.5 plus 105 to the over for Georgia State.
Yeah, this was one of those teams where after I did my first version of the ratings, I looked at the market and was like, whoa, you know, what's happening here? So I did another deep dive, looked closer at my numbers, like, you know, are they trending a certain way? You know, whatever. And this is where I landed. I tried to get their rating down closer to market, and just based on the data that I look at, that I value, that, you know, I've used over the years, I just couldn't get any lower on them. So I'm at 5.8 wins for them. You know, their strength of schedule, average opponent power rating minus 6.7, which, you know, in the Sun Belt is still pretty low. I mean, so I think they've got a manageable schedule. Their power rating, you know, it's not that I think they're the greatest team. You know, I don't have them like in playoff contention or anything. I've got them as a minus 7.3 on their rating, but just the combination of their rating and the way their schedule lays out, you know, I think they're going to go over that 4.5 win total.
Yeah. Sun Belt should be interesting. We actually had a Georgia State reference last week when Cole Kubelik was talking about Marcus Carroll and him transferring to Missouri, who rushed for 1,300 yards just a year ago. All right, Tyler, before we get out of here, let's run through a couple week one games that you see some edges from point spreads. And we'll start on a Thursday night. Minnesota is hosting North Carolina. Right now, market sits at Minnesota minus 1.5. What do your numbers say for that week one showdown in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, I've got Minnesota minus 6.5 in that game. Looks like the market's moving in my direction on that. So I went ahead and grabbed that early. If you can get that minus 1.5 now, I would do so. I think I'm both much lower on North Carolina than a lot of people and a little bit higher on Minnesota than a lot of people. So I'm definitely going to be on the Gophers in that game.
So you mentioned Notre Dame, a bet for you. Your numbers have Notre Dame a 6.5-point favorite at Texas A&M. Let's get to Indiana and Florida International. Yeah, baby, let's rock and roll here. Indiana right now around a 19-point favorite market-wide against the Golden Panthers of FIU.
Yeah, I've got Indiana minus 23.5 in this game. Now, again, to caveat that, Indiana was a little tricky to power rate coming into this year, obviously with the coaching turnover, but you know, Cignetti has done a great job wherever he's been, and he's done it early. You know, so when they brought James Madison up to FBS, I mean, his first year, I think they ended up in my ratings above FBS average. So I think he's going to do a good job there. And FIU, they had a much better season last year than anticipated, but they're still obviously not a good team or program. So I think that'll be a game where Kurt Cignetti will want to come out and really set the tone for his season for the Hoosiers. So I like them to cover the spread there.
For those of you wondering who the quarterback is for Indiana, it's not Jordan McLeod, who was James Madison's quarterback a year ago. He's at Texas State. It is Curtis Rourke. If you have watched some action in your time, the former Ohio quarterback is now at Indiana. So I believe it's his brother who goes by the Maple Missile, but regardless, Curtis Rourke, the new quarterback there for Indiana, and Kurt Cignetti's squad starting off against FIU. Georgia against Clemson, you mentioned this just real quickly. This is a neutral site game. What was your number, Georgia, week one against Clemson?
I've got Georgia minus 17 in that game. Okay. And again, that's with me really trying to give Clemson benefit of the doubt. So if it's more of a blowout than that, I won't be the least bit surprised.
All right, last one. I mentioned we got weird on win totals with Georgia State. Let's get weird on a game one line. Why not go to Amherst, Massachusetts? By the way, I was stunned last week when I was running through Missouri's schedule to realize that a top 25 team will be headed to Amherst, Massachusetts this year. Missouri plays at UMass. Someone should be fired in Columbia for that. But Eastern Michigan, the factory, heads to UMass week one. Right now, market has it at a pick. What do you got in Eastern Michigan, UMass, Tyler?
Yeah, I've got Eastern Michigan minus 3. I do like the Eagles in that game. I think that line opened with UMass as a slight favorite, and now that's moving in our direction towards Eastern Michigan. So I would grab that as soon as you can.
Give Tyler a follow on Twitter like I do, at Tshoe Index. Slide into his DMs so you can get access to his college football guide. And also this fall, hopefully back at VSiN with his weekly write-ups and breakdowns of college football. Tyler, this is awesome, man. Really appreciate the insight. Love the guide. And I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks, Tim.
There he is. Tyler Shoemaker will wrap up the podcast with some thoughts on the EA Sports ratings and also the blue chip ratio article that Bud Elliott put out on CBS Sports. All right, we're back. Thanks again to Tyler Shoemaker for his insight, the Tshoe Index. Shoot him a DM if you would like to grab a copy of the Tshoe Index heading into this upcoming year. So shoot him a DM there. His DMs are open. He said, slide on in. Come on in. All right, we're going to make it quick here to close it out because that open was longer than I anticipated. I just had a lot of fun going deep into the Heisman Trophy. I have a best bet for you that I have placed. I want to go through something regarding the blue chip ratio, courtesy of Bud Elliott at CBS, and then I'll close with something that everybody was getting fired up about, and I'm not all that fired up, and it's not Bronny James. All right, let's get a best bet. We're going to go under UCLA, 5.5 wins, minus 140. We heard from Tyler, his breakdown of it. A couple other folks that I've talked to like it as well. I hadn't pulled the trigger. I'm in now. UCLA under 5.5 wins. This adds to our portfolio of the Notre Dame unique way to bet that, where we're going to bet exactly 10 wins at 3-1, and then we're going to bet over 10.5 at plus 138, thus creating an over 9.5 market at minus $2. This is a little more simple. UCLA under 5.5, minus 140. Open the season against Hawaii. This is a game that has seen significant movement towards Hawaii. This was UCLA minus 17 a couple weeks ago when we talked about it on the podcast, and now it's 14. Now, I'm not saying UCLA is going to lose this game, but UCLA, first-time head coach in Deshaun Foster. You've got Eric Bieniemy coming in to be their offensive coordinator. They actually bring back a decent amount of talent, despite Chip Kelly leaving as late as he did. But the schedule's brutal. You got a first-time coach. And I always pick up on these subtle notes from the Phil Still Preview magazine. And what Phil pointed out was interesting. He has UCLA with the second most difficult schedule in the country. He also had it as the biggest change in the country from last year to this year. Last year, he had UCLA with the 68th most difficult schedule. And this year, number two. You're looking at a week four visit to Death Valley at LSU, home to Oregon, which they'll be off a bye, at Penn State. Minnesota's not going to be a walk in the park. I'll be honest, man, I don't think Rutgers is necessarily going to be a walk in the park. Bye week, Heisman Trophy winner Dylan Raiola, Iowa at Washington, home to USC, which, by the way, the only game of the year line UCLA is currently in on DraftKings. They are an underdog to USC, a +5.5. And then where's your mindset at when you play Fresno State, one of the better teams in the Mountain West, in that final week? Are you geared up if you've got four or five wins? Are you already talking about hitting the portal? So I think the schedule's brutal. I actually think Deshaun Foster should do a good job being a UCLA guy, but at the end of the day, I'm going to go under UCLA 5.5 wins. Bud Elliott, who does a really good job, he's a college football better, Cover 3 podcast, CBS Sports, 247, the dude's all over the place. He has an article up, and it's pretty interesting, called the Blue Chip Ratio. Essentially, what it boils down to is, do you have more 4 or 5-star recruits than 2 or 3-star recruits? If you're north of 50%, you are capable of winning a championship. And that is what this article that he wrote all comes down to, winning the national championship. It's not a TCU situation. They did not win it. It's not Washington a year ago. They did not win it. It is the team who wins the championship. Michigan, last year, 54%. Georgia, 2022, 77%. Georgia, in 2021, 80%. Alabama, 2020, 83%. LSU, 2019, 64%. Clemson, 2018, 68%. Alabama, 2017, 80%. Clemson, just barely got over at 52% in 2016. Alabama, 77% in 2015. Ohio State, 68%. Florida State, 53%. Alabama, 71%. And then Alabama again with 71% in 2011. I know Ari Wasserman talks about this too all the time. Stars matter. You can be a good football team, there's no doubt, and not have a roster stockpiled of 5-star recruits. You could also be not great, Texas A&M, in years past, not saying this year. But this article, go check it out. It is pretty interesting. And he points out the teams that, based off of this year, these are the teams, just based off of this calculation, that can win the national title. Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, Oregon, Oklahoma, Texas, LSU, Notre Dame, Clemson, Florida, Miami, Penn State, USC, Michigan, and Auburn. Kind of surprising to be in there. He did say that Florida State is just on the outside looking in. So the one team that did not get mentioned, who is currently 6th in the odds board, Ole Miss. Ole Miss, not north of 50% with the blue chip ratio. He does not include transfers, but even if he did, Ole Miss still wouldn't be there. So kind of interesting to note. Really good stuff from Bud Elliott over there. Make sure you go give that column a read, the blue chip ratio. All right, I'll close on this. EA Sports is coming out with college football, and it's going to be amazing. I can honestly say I am a passionate college football fan. It is my favorite sport because of the video game. My father went to Notre Dame. We would watch Notre Dame games. That was it for him. I took it to another level. And the college football video game, I can honestly say, is why I am as passionate about college football as I am. Growing up in Maryland, like Maryland's not a hotbed of college football. I tried to talk college football on my radio show back in the day in DC on Saturdays, and you at times could hear the people turning the channel. But I bring this up because EA Sports has done an awesome job with teasers and putting out different rankings to get the gears going a little bit. That's what you're supposed to do. And everybody was losing their bleep over Colorado's ratings. Colorado, overall 87, which is tied for the 16th best. 89th on offense, tied for 5th. And then the most laughable of them all, 84 on defense. I don't know who the hell came up with that. Tied for 18th. But folks, guess what team will likely be the most played team in dorm rooms across the country? Colorado. They've got Shedeur Sanders. They've got Travis Hunter. Coach Prime. Think back to early September last year. They were the talk of the sports world. Colorado football. So, as Tony Soprano once said, we're running a business here. I'm not going to get upset over a video game. But Tim, it's supposed to be as realistic as possible. Trust me. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be the most purchased video game, I don't know if ever is probably too far, because I'm sure there's a Call of Duty that would beat it. It'll be a very, very, very well-purchased video game. And it does not surprise me that Colorado is one of the best teams in said game, because people are going to want to play with Colorado. They're not going to want them to stink on defense. They're going to want to win national championships. However, lastly, I'll say on this, if you're going out there and winning a national championship with Colorado in a dynasty mode, I'm going to call you out. Grow a pair. It's too easy with the big teams. Go win a national championship with Toledo. Go win a national championship with Liberty. Go win a national championship. Liberty might not be a good example. With Florida International. Don't cheat and go with Colorado. That's easy. You got a pro quarterback, superstar, and Hunter. Come on now. You're better than that. All right. Just had to get that off my chest. That's going to do it for the podcast. We are hoping to have a pretty big guest next week, but I will not say who, just in case something maybe falls through the cracks, but hoping for a pretty notable guest. You might know the name, especially if you're previewing the college football season. I'll leave it at that. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend, tell your grandmother at July 4th, hey, you should listen to the College Football Betting Podcast. Give us a 5-star review as well. We'll be back next week right here in your feed. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.